Hello everyone, happy new year. Welcome to the Pinken.com Norwich City podcast. January is here, Norwich are unbeaten this year, everything's well in the world. I am Michael Bailey, and to top it all off, I'm here with Chief Norwich City writer Paddy Davitt and our colleague David Freezer. Gentlemen, happy new year to you, are you well?
What's not to be happy about, my friend? Yeah, things are looking up, including a trip to Stamford Bridge. I will leave it there, but you know what I'm referring to, and it's not the football.
The Wi-Fi is great.
The Wi-Fi is excellent. Lovely programme as well.
Yeah. Dave, are you looking forward to it?
I am. I've not been to Stamford Bridge, so that'll be good. Happy New Year. I've sort of passed that a little bit, to be honest, but I took down the Christmas decorations yesterday, so that's a good start. What are we today? The 7th?
8th, yeah. Sorry, 8th.
Yeah, there we go.
That's bad luck?
I don't really know, but
yeah, I think it is. For me,
I'd say that's quite early to bother to do it.
Well, if it hasn't it hasn't done you a mischief so far in your life, then you're doing pretty well. Just remembered, Stamford Bridge was, of course, the scene of my infamous chop-chop incident with Moose, so you know I might regale that story by the end of the podcast. I mean, to keep you waiting anyway. Welcome. As I said, we are in an unbeaten situation at the moment. Norwich City coming off the back of a victory on New Year's Day against Millwall at home. They had a reasonable Boxing Day, and then they managed to not lose at Burton, which is what they did the season before, let's remember. And of course, they've just come out of a goalless draw in the third round against Chelsea. So we've got plenty to discuss. We're not going to take too long over it, but we'll start with the Chelsea game, I guess, because I'm sensing there's a mix. There's the people who are really proud of the way Norwich played, the energy, the way they, you know, the commitment they showed, and just the positivity from the night. And there are people who are like, how can you praise the side that basically went out with no strikers and therefore got the goalless draw that their team probably lent itself to, albeit against Chelsea,
and didn't have a shot on target if you look at the official stats? I think I was surprised at how positive, taking the temperature on social media after the game, straight after the game, the day after, we're now Monday, two days on, but there was a lot of positivity shown towards that Norwich performance, which I understand, but I don't know, maybe the hack in me was looking at a Chelsea team who I didn't think were too bothered in the first half, made a lot of changes, they were going through the motions for me, and Norwich were nice and organised, and Conte praised them to that point, so take nothing away from that, but yeah, I don't think Chelsea were at it really until maybe a little flurry in the second half, but that's Chelsea's lookout. If they've come with that approach, then that's reflects poorly on them. I thought Norwich were good in their new shape. Players look comfortable, and you could see the confidence from three unbeaten games. You know, there's a composure to the play, I thought, which we saw in the best spell of the season. So I guess if you're painting basically two ends of the spectrum there, it was an excellent performance. They didn't get a shot on target. I'm probably somewhere middle of the road, I think. Yes, okay, it's a fourth unbeaten game, but I personally wouldn't be getting too carried away.
Dave, where were you sat on Paddy's perspective curve?
Yeah, it was frustrating to not see a striker. I thought the front three worked quite nicely and looked quite nice at times, but they didn't have anyone to feed. I mean, realistically, I suppose if you're going to do it, you would have had to sacrifice one of Tetti or Tribal to have Oliveira up front. But as we found out after the game, Oliveira had a bit of an ankle knock, so that changed things. And Cam apparently has a back problem, so he doesn't have a bank problem, I'm sure, but a back problem. But I thought there was a lot of good character shown from the Norwich side. You know. Tetti Tribal, obviously, but Christoph Zimmermann came in and did well. Hanley and Closer stood up to it. Jamal Lewis is becoming more and more popular every game. So I felt like the positives were enough to sort of create that positive atmosphere that, you know, there's no pressure on the game anyway, was there? So the fans could just kind of enjoy it. Not the most exciting of games. I mean, statistically, not a shot on target, but Josh Murphy's one must have been very close to being on target. The one that Caballero sort of spilled a little bit at his near post, unless he sort of dragged it on target himself. But if Josh had been more clinical, they could well have won that game, because there was that one opportunity, particularly in the first half, where the amount of times Josh Murphy cuts onto his right foot after going down the left wing, and then on this occasion he decides to go inside instead. and that was the time to actually do it and get a shot away. So yeah, if he'd have been more clinical, it could have been a different story, but overall a positive experience. I think
Josh had two shots on his left foot, and they both went roughly the same distance wide of the goal, and he himself was pretty disappointed that the one in the first half, as you said, it went out for a throw, that he didn't get that one on target, because that was the first time really Norwich had got in behind them. I mean, I remember seeing the sight of as good as Madison Pritchard and Josh were combining. There was at one point where there was the three of them with the ball, and I think they had five grey shirts as Chelsea were playing in front of them and another four behind them, pretty much. It was ridiculous. It was like a sea of three against whatever that adds up to, nine. But I guess, you know, Daniel kind of said, didn't he, after the gamepad, that it was a special setup for this game. Yeah. Is it something you would like to see in the Championship? Do you think it could work?
In the right environment, yeah, I think it could. Funny enough, just said it on the Q&A a little bit earlier on Monday lunchtime. My gripe with them is they are too predictable at times in the worst parts of the season. Very one-dimensional, is very lateral, very obsessive almost with the possession, and anything that can catch an opponent off guard in this division, because it's such an even playing field, Wolves aside maybe, then I don't think that's too bad a thing. If you can, I mean, we've got this from Farker anyway. There's almost a numbering system where he shouts something from the sideline, and I think Marley Watkins might have let that slip, and there's two or three different positional changes they can go to. But if you can go with something as quite potentially radical as a 3-4-3. I mean, what I liked in that system, okay, I'll take your points about top end of the pitch. It wasn't maybe the clinical edge, but it did free Pinto and Lewis, because they had a bit more insurance in terms of the three centre-backs behind them that they could bomb on, and both of those are naturally attacking full-backs. So I think that really embellishes their natural instincts, and you've obviously got in the centre then Tete and Tribal. So yes, I could see that being revised. And as we saw at the start in pre-season, I think in an ideal world, Farker would have gone with the three, whether it's a 3-5-2, whether it's a 3-4-3. Circumstances dictated he had to go to back to a traditional back four. But I think if he had a blank sheet of paper, he would start with a three at the back. So I can definitely see it getting revived as we move forward.
And of course, the replay, which again we might see the formation come out again, will be next week after the Bristol City game, but we don't know if it's a Tuesday or Wednesday yet, because we don't know if the replay will be televised. I'd imagine BT Sport might not fancy having to do it all again, but we'll see. I guess what we're looking at slightly wider, Dave, in terms of what Norwich have done in the league, what we're probably now trying to work out is whether their improvement is down to the fact they've been playing lower quality opponents, or whether this is a genuine improvement with some of the players that they've now brought back into the fold. Let's not forget, you know, Alex Pritchard hasn't been back in the team for too long, and of course Alex Tetti's now back in, and Tom Tribble. And they have got a really tricky little run of games coming up in the Championship.
Yeah, I don't think it's been a massive upturn, but I do think we've seen some progress. I mean, if you go from half-time of the Sheffield Wednesday game, obviously they've got three goals, 3-1 win there. Away at Leeds, they could easily have got something there and narrowly beaten. Brentford is the one sort of anomaly, because they were really poor in that game, weren't they? And Daniel sort of admitted afterwards that they approached that wrongly and that he prepared the team badly. So that was, you know, a fair admission. But from there on in, you know, this is now three clean sheets in four for Angus Gunn and the defence. Burton was obviously a horrible game, which, you know, we don't want to talk about ever again, really. But Birmingham was a good performance. Millwall, they should have won far more comfortably. And then to hold the Premier League champions, albeit pretty much a reserve team, but, you know, a good quarter of a billion worth of talent out on that pitch. You know, Bakayoko, 40 million in the summer, who was awful, I thought. And, you know, if he's worth 40 million, then so is Alex Pritchard.
That's the difficult thing about calling them worth that much money, isn't it? Because it's what someone's paid for them, but yeah, it's not necessarily the same thing.
Quite. And listening to Frank Lampard, I listened back to BT Sports coverage the following morning, and he was sort of pointing out, probably fairly, that it's a team that's been pulled together. It's a new team. They weren't used to playing with each other, and there's not a lot of football being played. Even someone like Pedro isn't really quite a regular. Willian is, you know, involved regularly, but not really a regular starter for Chelsea. But some serious talent out there, and Norwich did enough to nullify them. And it wasn't like Norwich just rolled out there and managed that. They did have to work hard for that. You know, Tetti and Tribal were needed to protect the defence, and they, you know, you look at the amount of time Zimmerman sort of stepped out to break up play as well from the centre of that three. So I'd say there's been enough positives for people to just feel a little bit more positive about the way things are going. You know, they're at least in control of their fate, it feels like, a little bit at the moment.
It is, of course, Bristol City, which we'll talk about a little bit in a moment, away before Norwich welcome Sheffield United to Carrow Road the following Saturday. Grudge match. What was it you called it, Pad? The something disrespect derby. That was the one. And then a trip to Brentford to round off the month. I just wanted to say that actually I enjoyed watching the Chelsea game more than the Burton game, because at least there was some football being played. The Burton game was just stop, start, let's hack each other, let's have a fight, let's have a set piece full time.
You could have gone to any Sunday league pitch the following day and seen a pretty similar game, couldn't you?
Atrocious. Anyway, I feel before we look ahead to Bristol City, we probably should talk about the transfer window, because that's the great thing about New Year, Pad. It's January, which means all hell breaks loose. Every year it gets bigger, and definitely not better, but definitely bigger, and everyone's consuming their rumours. So, do you want to have a stab at where Norwich are at the moment? Do you want to have a précis of some of the key headlines? Because I'm struggling to remember them, and I'm palming it off to you.
Yeah, let's have a think. Oliveira's been touted with Wolves, Pritchard with Huddersfield. As you can see, I pay a lot of attention to it.
Jerome's been linked with some three or four clubs.
So yeah, it's all rather boring, if I'm brutally honest. I don't have any affection for this time of the season, and I'll be glad when January comes and goes, because there is a pattern, you know, there is a pattern. There's so much speculation, and then a thimble full of it actually becomes reality, and it'll be the same this window. Norwich have made it quite clear they can't afford to buy players unless they sell players, and they don't intend on selling their top talent unless clubs bid ridiculous money. That is essentially where we are. So you look around the margins, and around the margins is a Naismith going out, possibly on loan, Russell Martin ditto, maybe a loan coming in, and I think that'll probably be it. You can see there's another pattern emerging with the lad Hernandez, who met Farker, and the lad from Den Haag, I'm not even going to try and pronounce his name, the right back.
Ebouy.
Both of those are clearly with a view to the summer. You know, they're obviously trying to do their work now, preparatory work now for the summer. So if they're trying to do work for the summer now, that tells me they don't plan on doing a lot of work in this window. So you're going to hear a lot, and I would suggest respectfully ignore most of it.
That's the way. It'd be interesting with those guys who they have, as you said, they're doing preparation work, because I wonder if they do make a big sale, whether they then do have the option to make those happen earlier. That would be the interesting part. But Dave, do you enjoy it?
A little bit. I mean, like you say, you have to, as long as you take a lot of it with a pinch of salt, then I think you can sort of enjoy the speculation around most of it. I'm just double checking the name of the lad that I did a little while ago, the one that surfaced today, striker at Dulwich Hamlet.
Reese.
Yes, Reese Alassani, I think it was, but I can't find it. I will find it in just a second. He's at Dulwich Hamlet, scored 17 goals in 16 games for them. That's the same level that Lowestoft play, so it's third tier of non-league. Reese Alassani, and he's been linked with pretty much everyone. He was with Palace as a lad. He's just turned 22, but he had a serious knee injury which prevented him joining Sheffield Wednesday when he left Palace. But apparently Celtic, Rangers, Barnsley, Reading, Gillingham all want this guy as well. So he's the sort of one where there could be some logic in it, that it might allow them to get Tristan Abrahams out on loan for the rest of the season. The under-23s, Fonkeo doesn't really seem to have done a lot, the Belgian lad that's come in, so whether he's kicking on as they'd have liked. D'Alangiasimi came in from Dulwich Hamlet as well, and he's somebody that they still think something of, because they've given him a contract until 2020 with the option of a further year. So there seems to be some logic in that one. That's the sort of thing that you can see happening in January, isn't it? You know, like Pad says, things around the fringes. Anything sort of too headline, short of massive transfer fees. If someone offers 20 million for Madison, yeah, we know that something's probably going to happen, but realistically, has Madison done quite enough yet for anyone to bid those sort of huge numbers?
Will be interesting. The under-23s are back in action tonight. Today, is it? Today?
Yes, they are at St George's Park against Stoke tonight.
So they're back in action. Will be interesting who they turn out over the coming weeks. Of course, Adam Phillips has gone out on loan to Cambridge United, and the under-18s, I'll just say this now before I forget, they are in FA Youth Cup action at home to Derby on Friday night, and we'll be there. So coverage, of course, will be at pinken.com. One theme we are getting, and you touched on it, Pad, as I said, Cameron Jerome's been linked. We've got Russ Martin probably going to be going out on loan. Stephen Naismith seems to be the talk of today, and possibly anyone taking him on loan. This is the senior guys, isn't it? I get the impression that maybe the cloth cutting hadn't been done to the extent they wanted in August, and that might be one of the things we do see in the next month.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, you go back to the phrase from Weber that this is a 3-4-5 window operation, you know, to basically inherit the squad they did and basically do the work they did last summer, and that was only really the first phase, you know, to have that turnover of players, 30-40 players, all those senior lads with the greatest will in the world. It was never going to be the case that you get to the end of last window in the summer and shall we diplomatically say, lads who they don't feel are going to play part of the future under Farker and Weber, we're not going to be at the club, because the nature of the business is they've all been given lengths of contract, and as a result, Norwich are obliged to pay them until another suitor comes along and pays them more, probably. And the lads you've mentioned, Jarvis, but that's an injury more, you would say. There isn't the interest, there isn't the offers, clearly, you know. And if you're any of those players, why would you willingly leave? You wouldn't, which is why we're in the situation now with Naismith, that even if he goes out on loan, the reality is Norwich will still probably have to pay the bulk or most, or probably all of his wages. So it's not a great situation from the financial point of view for Norwich, and it's not a great situation for the lad, because I'll give him his due, he's come out and he does want to play football. He doesn't want to sit and pick up his money. And I'm sure there's one or two in the game, maybe not in this Norwich squad, but there's one or two in the game, I'm sure that is the case. So that's it. That to me is a tick for that lad. But as it stands, he's got 18 months left, Naismith, and if nobody comes in, then Norwich were going to have to come to an arrangement with him, and maybe this is the first part of that phase, is to get him out and get him playing football.
I mean, I'm pleased to see that hopefully that it's going to be sorted in January with Martin and Naismith, because it doesn't seem sensible from anyone's point of view to have them both just sat around, but particularly Russell Martin. He's such a big character within the club. It almost, for me, it has become a bit like the John Terry situation at Chelsea, in that you've got this big character in the dressing room who, it can't be helpful for Daniel to have him there. Not that he's going to be a bad influence. We all know that Russ is a top guy. I mean, I remember when I went to speak to Sean Raggett at Lincoln, when I did the scouting piece on him in October, he'd said that when he signed for Norwich, Russ had texted him and that he called him a couple of times to welcome him into the club. And you never hear anything but good things about Russ. But it's not good for him, and it's not good for the club for him to just be sat around in the background. So we've seen from Stuart Webber and from Steve Stone, generally from the top down at the moment, you're getting some pretty frank talking, you know, that making words become actions quite quickly, and I would like to think that they get those situations resolved as best as possible. They're not going to be able to do that with Jarvis, realistically, are they, until he's fit? I mean, you'd have to pay all of his wages just to get him playing somewhere else. I mean, whether that ends up becoming a sort of medical insurance issue or something, I don't know. It really has dragged on for a long time now, but yeah, I'd like to see Martin and Naismith sorted this month.
And imagine both of those two will be desperate to play some games. They're absolutely key, and as Pad says, not wanting to hang around and see what happens. Okay, well, you know, January is still only, well, we're only 8 days in. That's the good news. So there's at least 3 weeks more of this gold to come, which is very exciting, Cos.
And as you wrote in your column, it normally continues beyond the deadline. We have all this build up to it, and then we're still sat here at what, 2 a.m. on the 31st of January, whatever it is, waiting for things to be confirmed.
And as normally is the case, most people won't be happy. It's the joy. Okay, well, let's have a quick look ahead. Just worth pointing out that you can hear what Josh Murphy had to say after the Chelsea draw. That's already on the podcast feed, so you can check that out. Ben Godfrey, I suppose, is one person we should touch on, because we did, of course, have that Alex Tetti is sees it as being highly likely he won't continue on at Norwich. I'm sure we'll get to talk about Alex in future podcasts. But Ben Godfrey played against West Ham, and you know, by all accounts, I enjoyed watching most of the game and the highlights. He had a big old package of analysis and praise from Match of the Day, and the radio commentators gave him Man of the Match. He really seemed to make an impression, and that's been an impression that's gone on for a number of weeks now, hasn't it, Pad? So. Is it a little surprising that he hasn't come back into the Norwich fold, or is this a question of when Alex Tetti probably leaves next summer, Ben Godfrey, the space is and the spot is yours to make it your own?
Yeah, 100%. And what I would say on that is, because he hasn't played every single game for Shrewsbury, there were some quotes from Hurst, the Shrews manager, when he left the match before Christmas, that it basically caught up with him, and that they had to remember, because he'd been so good clearly for them, that he's a 19-year-old lad, and this is really, apart from a brief flurry in York's first team, this is his first sustained exposure to men's football, if you want. So yeah, I think it would have been too soon. I know there was a lot of people who felt maybe he should come back in January and that he could almost go straight in and do a job. I don't share that view. I think he's in the perfect place now. There might be phases now between now and May where he again looks a little bit weary and he needs to be dipped out. But certainly if he returns to Norwich in the summer and he's played 35, 40 games, then for me he's a frontline option next year. And that's sad to say for Alex Tete, but I think there'll be a financial consideration there. Clearly Godfrey will command a fraction of what Tete's on. And that's the new reality at Norwich, I'm afraid. Every decision they make on the football side has to have a massive financial dimension. But setting that aside, Godfrey's the future, you hope, and Tete, loyal servant that he's been, his best days are probably going to be behind him.
And they've been at Norwich City, his best days. And I think I've got a feeling that Alex Tete probably fancies a new challenge as well. He's been here 4 or 5 years and probably wants to do something different, I wonder. So it's probably not as straightforward as offer him a contract and he'd sign it, because I just don't think that's the case. But there is something quite exciting about Ben Godfrey already, and we'll all be keeping a close eye on him at Shrewsbury the rest of the season, because they're flying very well in League One.
Yeah, the fact that he was on BBC TV yesterday was a timely reminder for a lot of Norwich fans who maybe have never seen Ben play, if they don't watch under-23s games perhaps, that he may be 19, but he has got the stature of a man, hasn't he? He is certainly physically capable of competing. I mean, that West Ham team was a bit lethargic, I suppose you could possibly say, but I think Shrewsbury imposed themselves on them in the game. And yeah, I think it was a tough call for Norwich with Godfrey on him coming back. But I agree with Pad that he is going to be perfectly placed to push for a first team place next pre-season once he's got this full season under his belt. But I think there must have just been that bit of a temptation there, thinking, because he's really, really close to what they need. So yeah, fingers crossed. I'm looking forward to seeing how he does, because he looked pretty close, like Jamal Lewis in pre-season. They both looked like they could be involved if needed. And of course, Carlton Morris played up front for Shrewsbury. He's on a bit of a barren run. That's 13 games without a goal for him. He scored 6 this season in 29 games, I think it is, overall. So, you know, he's one that, from watching that game yesterday, it's probably something we've seen from him a lot, in that he works a lot, he's a good target man, he's a good size, but is he a goal threat? And that's clearly what's going to go into the consideration with him. He's still got a couple of years on his contract at Norwich as well, so he's got a bit of time on his side, but he's 22. But I think if he's going to make the breakthrough at Norwich, he's going to need to add more goals to his game, from what I've seen so far, I would have thought.
Good stuff, Dave. Right, let's rattle through just what we've got looking forward to this weekend. A trip to Bristol City, Ashton Gate, which is a wonderful stadium to go and watch football. It's just that when we last went, not many people did go and watch football, so it was about half empty, I think, pretty much. It's waiting for Bristol City to click, which they look like doing this year, in fairness to them. I just wonder if they're at a pivotal point in the season now, because they've lost a few games, they've got a big League Cup semi-final coming up against Manchester City, isn't it? Two legs. That first leg is before Norwich's visit. It'll be a really interesting few weeks for them.
And is the second leg the following week, is it? Presumably. So Norwich's game.
I think it's a fortnight, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, they got whacked against Villa, which wouldn't be a good sign over the festive period. Real eye-opening result for your neutrals looking on. So yeah, they don't strike me as if they've got the staying power. I don't think they've got the biggest of squads, have they? So magnificent achievement. And I watched most of that game against United, and they looked very decent, really cohesive unit under you know, Lee Johnson. Everybody knew their jobs. They had two really good centre backs there, the lad Flint. He's been linked with Norwich, hasn't he? So yeah, there's a lot to admire there. That looks like a team that have been building and building. And of course, this time last year, when Norwich went there, you know, there was a lot of Bristol fans wanted Johnson out, and they stuck by him, the Bristol board. So it's credit to them. But I don't see them lasting the course, if I'm honest. I think they'll fall away a bit, like Sheffield United, who coincidentally are Norwich's next league opponents, aren't they? So yeah, if we want to be talking about more than this looks like a corner's turned and it looks like they're heading in an upward curve, my God, if we're still doing one of these after they play Bristol and Sheffield United and they're still unbeaten, then that to me would be a very good signal. Because in the first half of the season, you'd probably put Bristol and Sheffield, in terms of you look at their resource and what they're capable of, I would say these are the two who have been overachieved. So they might be just on the cusp, but it's still a very difficult task to go to Bristol away and of course Sheffield United at Carr Road. So yeah, two big games coming up for Norwich for me.
Absolutely spot on. And it would be interesting with Bristol City, because they have built the squad over a while, but they've kept hold of players who are probably attracting quite a bit of interest. So if it doesn't quite come off this year, they might come under a little bit of pressure, as you say, for Aidan Flint as well.
I think if they lose to Manchester City, that'll be four defeats on the bounce, won't it, going into the Norwich game. So that's got to be a good thing from Norwich's point of view, because I mean, if you could go there and nick a point, you'd be happy, given how they've done this year, given that they beat Manchester United there so recently. I think it'll be a difficult game. I haven't been to Ashton Gate since they revamped it, actually. I went as a fan and as a reporter when I was covering Scunny, when the media room was still in a porter cabin. So
it's not in a porter cabin now.
Well, I'm looking forward to seeing the upgrade then, but as we stand here, I would take a point ahead of Bristol City quite happily.
It's worth pointing out that actually before the last podcast, Jamal Lewis had never made a professional appearance on a football pitch. Is that right? Now he's had four, and he's basically the best thing since sliced Christmas pudding, Pad.
Yeah, well, we knew
sliced Christmas pudding.
Yeah, well, let's not get too carried away. Well, Norwich fans can get carried away, but I'm trying to think who he reminds me of, who blazed the trail and then tailed off. It'll come to me.
Roberto Carlos?
No.
Gibbs?
But just in terms of, you know, everything is, you know, he's literally like, he's the future. He's the past, the present and the future at the minute, the way he's getting oversold, I think. I would just like to let the lad develop. You know, he's going to, if he stays in the side between now and the end of May, then there'll be ups and there'll be downs, because that's the nature of young players. But on the slim body of evidence so far, the talent isn't in doubt, the temperament isn't in doubt, the way he was bossing that Zappa Costa, who is an Italian international, irrespective of whether it was Chelsea's B team or not. Fearless, you know, taking the ball in tight areas, confident, popping it off. You know, there is a player there all day long, and he just needs to be nurtured now and allowed to grow. But sadly, the inevitable financial caveat to everything, if he continues this rate of development, then, you know, it might not be too long in terms of Windows future that he's getting touted. Pinto asked him directly on Friday afternoon before the game, how good is he? He says, basically, with no disrespect, he can play in the Premier League. So, you know, if he continues this rate of development, he will be in the Premier League, and it's just a case of when. But obviously for now, it's new, it's fresh, and it's lovely to see a young man come in and take his chance.
Is it now or who with? Let's just keep it open. Who with? Could yet be with Norwich, Dave?
Yeah, I like what I've seen from Jamal. I think he's performed so well in these first few games that almost fans will leave him alone, and there's not going to be too much pressure on him. And he is going to make a mistake. He's a defender. All defenders. Adam Drury made mistakes. It happens if you're a defender, doesn't it? So sooner or later, one will come along. But hopefully, everyone will just give him that little bit of breathing room, and they'll just say, all right, fair enough, you've earned that mistake, now kick on again. So I don't think there'll be too much pressure on that. What I like about him, what always frustrated me about Martin Olsen was how he was this sort of modern breed of fullback, where you jockey the winger, you don't try and tackle him, you just run along him, you try and stop the ball coming into the box. And I'm sure somewhere there's stats that back up that you're better off by not diving in, by not trying to make a tackle, that over the piece, that perhaps that means less balls come into the box. But what that doesn't take into account for is what we saw again in the Chelsea game, is that sometimes if your left back puts his foot in, makes the tackle, it gets a bit of a rise from the crowd. And that's what I think Norwich fans have enjoyed seeing from Jamal so far. He is happy to put his foot in. And other than perhaps Mark Tierney, I don't think we've really seen anyone since Adam Drury who's a defensive left back in that style, and I've been quite impressed with that, given that when I'd seen him developing for the under 23s and the 18s that he was a winger. So he's physically developed. I think he's, you know, already performed better than Husband or Steeperman had managed at any point during the season. So as far as I'm concerned, he's the first choice left back. Let him develop, let him grow, try and keep the pressure off him a little bit. And he seems to, like the word you use there, Pad, temperament, he seems like he's sort of taking it all in his stride. You know, Chelsea didn't bother me. And one of the moments I liked as well, I mean, if I was a 19-year-old left-back playing in such a high-profile game, I think I'd be glued to the halfway line when there's an attack. I think I'd be too nervous to get forward. But then at the end of the first half, Alex Pritchard's crossing into the box. Who's breathing down Zappa Costa's neck in the six-yard box? Jamal Lewis trying to score a goal. And I think that takes some stones on a 19-year-old. So fair play to him. Let's hope he can kick on.
Yeah, absolutely. But really promising things. Interesting what you're saying about putting your foot in, because you also, if you slide in and get it right, you're probably more likely to come away with the ball, which is something he also did on a couple of occasions too.
And on a few times. I mean, how many times have we talked about that was something that Grant Holt always did well for Norwich, that, you know, you put in a tackle, you get the crowd going at the right time. It was something that Tom Tribal did against Millwall as well. Straight after his goal, Millwall went nearly got away on a counter, and Tribal slammed into a tackle. The Barkley cheered, and everyone was all of a sudden on the same page. So, there's a lot to be said for that, I think, and I suppose you can't translate that into stats at times.
No, that's very true. Well, Jamal and Ben Godfrey, both 19 years old. Almost getting, looking forward to next season already, Pad. Yep.
No. Only because, unfortunately, it will probably... I'm sounding very negative on this podcast, I've realised today, but I have to be the voice of reason, you know. And the reality is, if they're still in the Championship, I dread to think, but there will be some of those young players who won't be in a Norwich shirt at the start of next season. That's the reality.
That is indeed.
Enjoy it.
Enjoy it while we've got them, which we will do at Ashton Gate on Saturday, the next stage of this remarkable journey that is the Championship football season. There you go, I picked that up, didn't I? We will, of course, be live before, during and after the game at pinken.com, the Pinken Facebook channel and the YouTube channel too. And, of course, don't forget that the Pinken Show will be live with you on Wednesday evening on both of those pages too. So check us out then. If you've got any questions for us, get them in on Twitter and things like that. We'll try and get, you know, more questions in over the season. New Year's resolution. Dave, you're mouthing something at me. I think it says draw.
Yes, cup draw tonight, of course. Fourth round draw Monday evening. We'll obviously have all that on the website as soon as possible. And so we'll know when we all go to Stamford Bridge, what, in a week or so's time, who is going to be the carrot on the end of the stick. Will it? Well, it's not going to be Ipswich, we know that.
as it rarely has been in the fourth round in recent years. To imagine teams having a worse third round record than Norwich, and one of them being Ipswich. Hey, there we go. All right, cheers, gents. Thanks, Dave. Thanks, Pad. Thank you very much. Thanks all for listening. We much appreciate it, and we'll be back again possibly next week, although I know there's a replay around, so keep an eye out. And either way, pinken.com for all your Norwich City news, especially in January, because it's quite busy, apparently. Bye.